Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/tripcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Texas Talking. What was that you said? Texas Talking. Gonna hoop up inside your head.
Hi, this is Jason Villalba, Texas State Representative from District 114 in Dallas, welcoming you to this week's TribCast. Stay tuned as Evan Smith and his team bring you the latest news from the Texas legislature. I assure you, what you are about to hear is much more interesting than 7 hours of testimony in one of the committees. Thanks very much and have a great day.
Thank you, Representative Villalba. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton. Unfortunately, Evan Smith is not here this week, but his team is. First up to bat is Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Said with such enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, it was a weird intro. Go ahead.
Reporter Kate Galbraith is also here.
Hello.
That was enthusiastic. I liked that.
Absolutely.
Let's see if Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune can top it.
I'm actually more of a Team PETA than Team Smith. Just saying.
I don't even know what that means. Oh, Hunger Games.
There you go.
Yeah, you're younger than I am, so you would get these things.
I have kids younger than you. That's about it.
Speaking of teams, is this where we talk about the Texas Monthly?
Probably
loss
so.
To the Texas Tribune.
We should mention that. There is a, you know, the Texas Tribune has a softball team. Maybe you've heard of it.
It's legendary.
Yeah, and they
it's
have
like
won.
The Saints.
They
yeah,
have
the
won
80s.
One
yeah,
game.
Exactly right.
They've won a single game. They did it this week, and it was against
Texas Monthly.
What was the score?
The score was 11-4.
So it wasn't close.
Sounds like a blowout.
In our terms, yes.
How far into the game did the Texas Tribune people go ahead and take the bags off their heads?
We were watching the clock tick down, sort of praying that it would tick faster so that, yes, we could walk off the field.
That's just strategic play is all that is.
There you go.
Yeah. So congratulations to us. We'd like to start off by saying condolences to Texas Monthly.
You know, I mean, Burka's a good writer. He's not a great pitcher. No, he.
They are called
no,
Texas Monthly's team is
yeah,
called
the
Burkas,
but he didn't.
And we are called the Runoffs.
KUT's team, of course, is just not in our league.
No, I think we're going to be in a different league.
Yeah,
I don't know what the league is.
All right, now
I don't even. I think we're the
think
John Aileys. I don't
soon
know.
As we start talking about KUT's
I wanted to call
team,
us the illegal aliens. Get it? But they wouldn't do it.
I actually don't get it.
Yeah, pretty
John
soon
Ailey?
We ought to start talking about something anybody wants to listen to.
The alien
John Ailey yeah. is a DJ there.
He's much more than that. Actually, yeah, he's much more than that.
A VJ. He's a VJ.
No, he's not a VJ.
Okay.
In other news.
Yeah, let's actually.
Or actual news.
Yeah, right. I just came back from, honestly, one of the most tense and fascinating meetings of the University of Texas System Board of Regents that I've ever attended.
What's
so
going
that's
on?
What I want to talk about.
Yeah.
They had a split vote, which I remember a couple years ago, this new group of regents had joined the board. And of course, everyone, we've talked about them on here a lot. It's been sort of tense and controversial ever since. But one of the early indications that things were going to be controversial is that one of them cast a no vote in a public meeting on something. Usually these votes are sort of figured out ahead of time. Everyone votes the same way. Everything's unanimous. It's great. Today, they had a split vote. It was two members were missing. It was 3-3, and Vice Chairman Paul Foster, who was presiding as chairman in the absence of Chairman Gene Powell, cast a tie-breaking vote to do yet another review of UT Austin's relationship with the University of Texas Law School Foundation.
And this is, some people consider this a proxy for doing an investigation and trying to do something to the president of the University of Texas?
Not some people. One of the regents today, Regent Hicks, said, we all know where this is heading. This is really just about getting rid of Bill Powers. Why don't we just put that on the table instead of commissioning an outside review that's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to look into this issue yet again?
To see if there's a reason to get rid of him.
Right. Because really,
was the guy saying that one of the people who voted with Powers or against Powers? Or I should say, for or against a law, right. a law school investigation?
He voted against continuing the review. The basic issue is that in 2011, if people remember, and if they don't, in 2011, the dean of the law school was asked to resign forcefully. He was not given much of a choice. But one of the issues was, you know, basically the morale of the law school had sunk to, I mean, almost Texas Tribune staff levels. It was pretty low.
Before the win over yeah. the
right.
Texas free, Monthly. Yeah.
Pre-Burka defeat. But one of the points of contention was that there was this forgivable loan program that was being run by the Law School Foundation, which is an organization separate from the law school itself. And the dean had, in fact, received a $500,000 forgivable loan, and this developed a lot of scrutiny. The UT system commissioned an investigation of it by their general counsel. Their general counsel came back with the report. They didn't like the findings of that report. They told them to dig deeper into the UT system and into
the foundation.
The foundation, and go back when Powers was the dean. And he did that and came back and said, well, when Powers was the dean of the law school, the program ran okay. It's since then that it's gotten bad. They didn't like that. They had an internal auditor go back over that report, and now today they set aside that report and are going to go forward and pay for an external review of the situation.
So they're going to start basically review the whole thing all over again.
Right, and they said that the report had fact discrepancies, quote unquote. They weren't exactly clear on what those were, but they seemed to indicate that Powers, who has denied knowing about Dean Sager's forgivable loan, they seem to feel like they have evidence that he did know about it, and that requests by the faculty to review the compensation system had gone unheeded for a number of years.
Other than as a proxy for the over who should run the school, does this matter to anybody? I mean, is the allegation that the foundation has been badly run, or that people were self-dealing in the foundation, or just that it just smells funny?
I guess the allegation is that it smells funny. I talked to Alex Cranberg, who's a regent who voted for yet another review, and he said that even if they come back with a report that has the exact same conclusions, which is basically that the conclusions of Bergdorf's report were that the program was not appropriate and should be stopped, and they have since stopped it, and now they're routing all compensation for law school faculty through the university so that it's a matter of public record.
Right.
You can still get money from the foundation, but
right,
you now
which
see,
of course is
you'll
normal.
Now see where the money is
right.
going.
The problem
how it's
was
being
that it was going from the foundation to the faculty so that the public couldn't figure it out, and
right.
didn't seem to be enough oversight or knowledge about faculty compensation in the administration.
And I think we discussed this maybe last week. You know, this is something that athletic departments across the country always have. They have a foundation on the side that helps to fund salaries and programs within athletic departments. So the fact that the law school had a foundation
right.
is no... That's not what smells
so, but
funny.
What Cranberg said is that he would, if they came back with the same conclusions, he wants those conclusions to have an exclamation point, not a question mark, at the end of them. So he doesn't want anyone to doubt them. He doesn't want anyone questioning them. And right now they question them. After this hearing, Bill Powers had to come out and say, look, if the insinuation here is that I have not been forthcoming or transparent with the Board of Regents, that is just false. Because they essentially insinuated that he may have not been totally truthful with them. So we had to come back and say that they were not being totally
truthful.
Who's
going to do the review?
They haven't said yet.
Have they? Is it something that they put out for bids, or is it something?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, they must have spent a lot of money on this review process.
Well, they haven't. I mean, they haven't done it yet. Oh, yes. Another region, I forget which one, said, "Look, we've already spent a couple $1 million on this, and we've come to conclusions. The attorney general has reviewed them and agreed with our conclusions. We've changed our practices at the Law School Foundation. Like, what more do you need?"
An exclamation point, apparently.
So the people that are for continuing the review said, we just want to be, we want to be fully confident that we are doing everything right.
Who gets to pay for all this? Is this a taxpayer thing, or is the foundation paying for it, or?
Oh, no, the system's paying for it, which means there's some tax money involved.
You talked about them wanting an exclamation point. Wasn't there an exclamation point delivered earlier in the week from a joint legislative committee on this whole deal?
Oh, yeah. This comes one day after Representative Jim Pitts, Republican from Waxahachie. Is that right?
Yeah. Waxahachie.
They call it Waxahachie, but that's okay.
Yeah, but they live there. I live here. I don't know.
It's Reeve Hamilton, ladies and gentlemen.
He said publicly at a hearing that the Regents were engaged in a witch hunt of Bill Powers. In fact, he said witch hunt after witch hunt after witch hunt, and then he said he wants the witch hunts to end. So he said it four times in the committee. I suggested that they just throw all the university presidents in a lake, see who floats. And then
that would determine who was a witch. Yeah, that's good.
But so, I mean, things have... We talked about the UT system.
So everything's
last
going really well over at the state's institution of higher education.
The legislators could not have been more clear that they want to see an end to this drama. When they met, they had this special meeting that's designed to look into the problems of the UT system. And they were pretty clear, like, we want this to calm down. We're going to look into it. The members of the committee were very, very eager to subpoena the regents. Pitts was like, how do we get into their executive sessions?
You know, wow.
Which are their closed door meetings. So they're eager to get involved and calm things down. And the very next day, you have this very, very tense, we're moving forward with our investigation thing. Now, of course, from the regents that want the investigation, their perspective is they say. I mean, if you take them at their public word, their desire is that they want to be fully truthful and fact-based in all their decision-making.
Right. We want this to be transparent and everybody
right.
see what's going on. And how many of the, this is, you may not have looked at this, but how many of the regents who have to get Senate confirmation during the next 10 weeks voted to do another study?
Only one of them.
Okay.
Which is Foster. He cast the tie-breaking vote. I mean, the interesting sort of internal parlor game politics there is that there's a lot of talk about Foster being the next chairman. And so this meeting gave him a chance to both preside as chairman, because the actual chairman was off on vacation in Colorado, conveniently, or inconveniently, you know, for him, I guess, if he really wanted to be at this meeting.
Maybe we should investigate that.
Yeah, there are
do the study.
I mean, there are
I'll go.
they have telephones in Colorado. I have been there, so.
Yeah, the regents have met before as just a conference call, right?
But I mean, they've had an official meeting. I want to hear the rest of this.
Sorry.
This gave Foster a chance to preside as chair and cast an important vote in the direction that the governor's office and others probably favor. And the governor's office and others have significant influence on who gets to be the next chairman. So if they want him to be the next chairman, this is a good chance for him to show his, his chairman-like abilities.
And is the flip side to that he could not get confirmed by the Senate now? I mean, that may be an extreme case, but is that...
Well, I mean, you know, but he... Foster was very clear about what he said he was casting a vote for. He said there... Based on the information we have now, which is all this information that the regents have gotten through their many, many open records request of UT Austin, he said, I'm not entirely confident that we had all the facts when this first report was put together, and so I want another review, but I don't think this is a criticism or an indictment of any individual or group at UT Austin or anywhere else. So he was made very clear that's what he was voting for, just making sure they had all the facts. But it was tense and weird, and it seems inevitable that this will all lead to a ugly showdown. You could have thought, okay, maybe it's just cresting and things will calm down after the hearing yesterday. But after this meeting, it seems like things can't.
Nothing's happened in the last few weeks that would say that this is doing anything except accelerating. I mean, this whole, system versus powers, and, whether to what extent are the regents going to run universities or let the universities run themselves. I mean, the fight seems to be accelerating.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is true.
If this isn't important at all, just tell me to shut up. But
it's not
the three people.
Then.
The three people that weren't there.
Is this a thought that you have?
No, the three people that weren't there. Is there? Do we think we know how they may have voted? I mean, are all three of these people that would have voted against the review?
No,
so they're not
there. Two voting members weren't there. The student region wasn't there. Powell wasn't there.
The chairman.
He was vacationing in Colorado. It's hard to get away from vacations. And then Prentice Gary, who's another regent who's cycling off the board, wasn't there. And I don't know. I mean, the sort of most observers would probably expect Gary to vote along with Hicks, Dannenbaum, and Stilwell to stop the review, Powell to go forward with the review. But this is all, once again, parlor game stuff. But if you get rid of Powell to give Foster the chance to be chairman for a day, and you keep Gary, then it's going to be a 4-4 vote.
This is like missing an episode of Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
I don't even know who all of these people are anymore.
No, but I think the takeaway for TripCast listeners is what Ross said, is that this thing is accelerating and getting uglier. And now the regents are publicly divided and actively opposing each other, rather than previously when it was sort of like, oh, have you heard this? Have you heard that? I bet, and then everything would be like, the meetings would be calm and whatever.
So predict the future a little bit without saying, this is going to happen or that's going to happen. What are the next steps? I mean, do we have to now, does it all stop while we wait for this report? Is it important that the chairman of appropriations is writing a budget for the people that he's criticizing? I mean, what's the, you know, what are the next, you know, next couple of mile
markers? The next steps are all in the legislature now, because now the regents have to wait for a report. Unless they decide that, you know, Powers' statement that what they insinuated, if they insinuated it, was sort of how he couched it, was false. If they take that as, like, you know, an affront to them, then they could respond to that in the next meeting. I'm not sure when their next formal board meeting is. Huh. But it's got to be coming up in the next month or two.
Right.
I think it's in May. But we do have this oversight hearing, and where, I mean, they, like I said, they're pretty eager to subpoena regents. They're hoping the regents will come willingly. I've heard that not all of the UT regents are naturally inclined to come willingly.
Wow.
So they will either have to be talked into that or compelled to come.
When is the hearing?
Well, they just had their first one. The next one's whenever they schedule it.
Oh. After the House clears the budget, I would assume, if Pitts is one of the leaders of it. But
he's not one of the leaders of it. He's a member of it.
They're just a member. Okay.
Yeah. But
who are the heads?
They're going to bring in, the heads are Branch and Seliger, respective Higher Education Committee chairman in the House and Senate. But so that hearing is where the next action is, that and the Transparency Committee that Strauss set up, which already had a hearing on the Law School Foundation situation. Trey Martinez Fisher, after that, said that he wanted to basically redo that hearing. The system didn't have a representative testifying at it. They had a representative on hand who was not called up, but he wants the system more involved in that discussion. So there are two committees now in the legislature ready to hear these issues. Both of them seem to have pretty vocal members that are not happy with the way the regents have been handling things lately.
Wow.
And it's going to be fun. Or terrible if you're in either the staff of the UT system or UT Austin. Fun for reporters, though, which is all we care about on the trip.
Well, this gives people something to talk about UT before football season starts, right?
This is better than football season. Better than football season has been, anyway.
Well, that's, yeah.
Really? It sounds like, inevitably, there will be a lot of losers in this situation as well.
Oh, snap. Well.
Yeah. You can send questions or comments about this Tribcast to Tribcast, what is it? To Tribcast at TexasTribune.org.
Ben Philpott.
Ben Philpott right. at TexasTribune.org. Before we move on to our next...
That actually is my email. What are you doing?
Send them to Ben. Yeah, yeah.
Before we move on, we should talk about our sponsor, which is Audible.com, a wonderful source of audiobooks.
Woohoo!
And I think if you go with the link we're about to tell you, you can get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at Audible, and then you can take advantage of that on your next drive out to Marfa and back.
There you go.
Do you have anyone have any audiobooks they'd like to recommend? Ross?
Walk in the Woods, Bill Bryson, The Screwtape Letters with John Cleese. You want how many of these you want?
Well, what about the Harry Potters?
The Harry Potters.
I wanted a recommendation.
A recommendation.
Because, you know, we have to do this week after week. We don't need to save up.
Oh, well, that's right.
There's so many great audiobooks on there, we can't recommend them all in 1 week.
A Walk in the Woods, Bill Bryce.
All right. And if you want that or some other book, you can go to audibletrial.com/tribcast. Now let's move on to Kate's fracking series.
Oh, yay.
It always sounds like an
Is that a pejorative? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Here's Kate's fracking series.
Did you guys watch Battlestar Galactica? Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
Kate? You would enjoy it.
As you know, I am pop culture challenged, Reeve.
The
so
cuss
are
word
a lot
is,
of people that have watched Battlestar
no, the,
Galactica.
The cuss word is frack.
Yeah. Throughout this, throughout the show.
Somebody...
I won't tell you which cuss word it fills in for.
Somebody was asking me yesterday how I spelled frack, you know, F-R-A-C or F-R-A-C-K, and he said that shows what side of the divide you're on, because industry wants it F-R-A-C, and, you know, but common usage is F-R-A-C-K.
Wow.
Yes. Is that what your series is about?
Oh, yes.
Part seven, yeah. Right.
Yes.
To frack or frack?
No, I think the main question that you've been looking into is, does the state have enough water to continue its most profitable enterprise?
That's right. And, you know, fundamentally, the state undoubtedly will make enough water one way or another because oil and gas is so important. But basically, the issue is that hydraulic fracturing, fracking, F-R-A-C, F-R-A-C-K, uses very large amounts of water, 4 to 6 million gallons per well. And that sounds like a large figure, and it is significant in the regions where this fracking takes place. Overall, fracking, you know, despite this high water use, accounts for less than 1% of the state's overall usage. But in you know, South Texas and parts of West Texas, it can get into the double digits in some of these rural areas. And you know what fracking is I have to explain this every time. It's very
this
fun.
This is not in the Battlestar Galactica sense.
No, different. it is basically blasting a lot of water plus some sand and some chemicals down a well to break up hard rock, and there's oil and gas trapped in the pores of the rock, and it comes out and everybody's happy, but also some water comes back out. So you not only have to put water in, you have to bring it back out. And so one, you know, there are many sub issues with this. I could talk all day about water and fracking, but I won't.
I just did that about UT. I'm a girlfriend.
But anyway, one issue is truck traffic. You know, you need probably a couple hundred trucks, several hundred trucks to bring the water in, and then you need those trucks, and then you frack it, and then you need those trucks also to cart the water out, because some of the water that you put in comes actually back up,
right.
And you need to get rid of that, as well as some of the there's some water that's existed underground next to the oil and gas, and so that stuff comes up too, and it's nasty stuff.
Full of chemicals, or is it brackish, or what's the condition of the water that comes back up?
I mean, it can completely vary, but yeah, it's sort of fundamentally brackish, I would say.
And where do they go with that?
They take that, take all the water that comes back up, and generally truck it to a disposal well where they shove it back in the ground.
And that's where we get the earthquakes. Just asking.
It's like reading the cover of National Enquirer. Keep going.
Ben is so edgy.
Ignore him. Just ignore him.
Yes.
This is a controversial theory, right?
The disposal wells are controversial. People living near them are worried about the earthquakes, which, you know, have been pretty minor earthquakes.
Right.
I mean, these are small.
There's only been one or two that have even gotten into the fours.
Right, in Texas.
It's a minor earthquake now and then when you have natural gas or whatever we're fracking.
That's exactly what the industry would say.
So the other question I have is, when you go to the well and inject water into the well, do you need clean water to do that? Does it have to be potable water, or can they use, you know, basically water that's not fit for any other purpose for fracking?
Right. Well, the answer is that's changing. You know, 3 years ago, a lot of companies did use only fresh water, which you probably you might not want to drink, but it'd be pumped out of the ground, you know, and before it was sort of treated to drinking standards,
right.
Maybe. And so they'd use that, but now they're looking at using more brackish water given the shortages of fresh water around. And they're also trying to recycle some of this water that comes back up. But again, it's nasty stuff. It's got sort of chemicals and minerals and different elements in it. And some of that stuff you can keep. Other stuff is going to muck up your drilling process if you reuse it. So you want to take that stuff out. So it's, you know, it's amazing. I've done 3 articles on this. We're running a whole series on water and fracking. Very exciting. And I've gotten a bunch of emails from companies here and there that are like, look at my new frack water cleaning technology. So, yeah, there's kind of a lot of happening in this space.
So there's no problem here necessarily, but a lot of companies are popping up to solve what's not a problem here necessarily.
No, but it is a problem for the communities that are affected. But yes, we are like the Silicon Valley of frack water cleaning.
And you were saying that these rural communities are especially affected. I mean, there's some fracking going on in places where there may have only been, you know, 1,000 people within a county, but the water that it's needed is you know, outstrips whatever their infrastructure was and whatever they were used to being able to use in a month. Is that
right? Yeah, it's a lot of water. I mean, on the other hand, there's always been a lot of water use for agriculture, you know, in a lot of these areas. You know, ag accounts for, they say, 60% of the water used in Texas, and fracking less than 1%. But fracking, as Jim Keffer, who's chairman of the House Energy Resources Committee, he put it that, you know, fracking is under scrutiny for water use because they're like the last big players into the kind of water use territory. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, this was not on anybody's radar screen, but now right. it's like, ah, you know, these rural areas are...
But they've also come in, they're the last big player, and they've entered at a low water mark in terms... I mean, we just... They came in when we were in the middle of a huge drought, right?
Was low water mark a pun?
I don't know. If it was, yes.
But it's classic because they're also, you know, the areas that, you know, the areas where they are increasing the demand on water and roads is also the areas where they're increasing jobs and the economy and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody's
Midland.
Got mixed feelings, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. Midland was the fastest growing metro area last year of anywhere in the country. Huh. I mean, and that's all oil.
Didn't some developer announce like a 58 story tower in Midland this week?
Yeah, there's going to be like a tower that's twice as tall as anything in Midland.
It'll
yeah.
be wind challenged.
They had a nice little picture of it on the thing, and it really looks absolutely ridiculous. This gigantic.
It'll have a great view as a West Texan. I got to say that thing's going to be fun to ride.
Yeah, we'll see it from San Angelo.
But will the plumbing work? Right? Will they have running water? Or will the taps just be dry?
Well, if they don't have running water, we'll go to do a story. It'll be an exciting story.
That's the next series, I
we
guess.
We can only hope, then. Right. More Kay Galbraith stories. Since we try to have more than two topics on here, and I rambled on too long.
Well, we did talk about the big win over Texas Monthly, too. Kate, how many runs did you drive in?
None, but I did get a hit, and I walked twice.
There we go.
Well, What about term limits then?
this is nice transition. Well played. So in the middle of this thing, you know, term limits last came around in 1990, 91, 92, when the Republicans were trying to get Democrats out of office. And, you know, one of the things that they were talking about all over the country was we ought to have term limits. And it was a way of knocking off incumbents. And in Texas and some other states, you know, it quieted down for the most part. But now in Texas and some other states, it's percolating back up because the Republicans who are in office have had hold on office for so long that the food chain is clogged. So we have the longest serving governor in Texas history. We have the longest serving attorney general in Texas history. We have a lot of people who've been in office for a long time, and there's some rattling in the ranks to say, you know, maybe we ought to limit this. So Kevin Eltife in the Senate, Lyle Larson in the House, both have legislation. It's different, but they both have legislation that would limit the terms of statewides. Larson's would also limit the terms of legislators. And I guess the idea, although they say, you know, the people that are promoting this just as they did 20 years ago say, you know, it's not aimed at anybody. It's just good government. It's a good idea. We ought to do this. It's aimed at somebody. I mean, you know, you're trying to, you're knocking off people who are about to be in office or who are now in office.
Well, they want Jerry Patterson out at land commissioner.
Well, the Eltife thing wouldn't tell Perry, you've had your 8 years, you're gone. It would say from now forward, you can only do 8 more years. And it would be put to the voters. So part of the argument here is, you know, if the voters don't want to do it, they can vote down the constitutional amendment. So it got out of the Senate, so we'll see how it goes in the House. It's kind of an interesting
Was
argument.
It surprising they got out of the Senate?
You know, it never has before. You know, part of the reason was that, you know, Rob Mosbacher from Houston was one of the guys really pushing this 20 years ago. And the guy he was pushing it toward was Bob Bullock, who had beat him in the lieutenant governor's race. Bob Bullock was running the Senate, so Rob Mosbacher's bill was dead in the Senate. So that dynamic's no longer there. And, you know, you've got a couple of people in the Senate now. Eltife is one of them. He was city councilman in Tyler, term limited out of that job and became mayor. And then became a state senator. So, you know, he said, I've lived under the system, it works. And, you know, I think there's a lot of pent-up, even if it's not voiced necessarily, there's a lot of pent-up frustration in the Republican ranks with the org chart isn't moving
well,
fast
enough. And you say that it's, you know, who is it pointed towards? I mean, doesn't everybody kind of say that it's the domino at the top that hasn't moved, and that's why everything else is clogged up? I mean, it's Governor Perry. If he would move on, then the people, then Abbott might be governor, and this person might be AG, and this person might be lieutenant governor, and on and on.
Of course, well, he tried to put that to the American people.
Eventually, you get so far down the line that, you know, anybody who's voting on this can say, and then I could move up, you know. One interesting thing about a constitutional amendment like this is that it doesn't go through the governor's office. So if the House and the Senate approve this, it goes to the voters, and Perry doesn't get to vote on it. So he gets to vote like the rest of us. He doesn't get to veto.
Has he indicated how he would vote?
No.
How long are the term limits for?
It's 8 years or
Two terms.
It's two terms, not including a partial term. So Perry could have been elected under this system. He could have taken over for George Bush in 2000, been elected in 2002 and 2006, and then he would have been done.
But
and that's what wasn't that the one funny line that Chris Bell had at the debate in 2006? He says, do you know whether or not the state has term limits for the governor's office? And he said, yes, we don't have any, and that's my best reason why you should vote for me instead of Governor Perry.
Yes, we don't.
And when will, of course, Perry is fixing to announce what his decision is on whether or not to stick around in later 2013.
It's another iteration of this thing. You know, we've seen this a couple of times. What are you going to say, and when are you going to say it? And, you know, he keeps giving us basically the same thing back, which is that I'm going to tell you in June, when the legislature's gone, whether or not I'm going to run for re-election. The first time he said this, he was sitting next to Greg Abbott, who said, you know, to the next question, what are you going to do, General? He said, well, I'm going to wait till June, and everybody got a big laugh. So there's the big announcement. And then the other day he got asked this question again, gave the same answer, and then almost as a throwaway, just kind of an aside, said, and sometime after that, later in the year, I'll talk about whether or not I'm running for president. So we had another round of, you know, 2014, 2016.
There's some term limits there on the presidency.
There are. He would only be able to serve till 2024.
That's if the Midland Tower story doesn't work out, then you can go do that story.
Kate. Nice.
Yeah, you want to follow him around this next time? It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
It actually is.
Yeah. Cushy job. Anyway.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
You get bussed around. That's it. In Iowa. How's that not cushy?
Zombie burger was delicious.
Zombie burger in Iowa. That's another recommendation. Zombieburger.com/tripguest. Get a free burger, 30-day free trial.
That's not true.
Yeah. All right. Questions and comments, go to tribcast@texastribune.org. Your Audible membership deal is audibletrial.com/tribcast. We would like to thank Kate, Ben, Ross, and our producer, Todd, for being here today. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our theme music. This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Wait, I have to tell you something. There's a bus outside. It's blue, but it's got ghosts on it. Wait, skeletons. Even the bus driver is a skeleton. This is an interesting bus. Look for it.